So, guys, some pretty big news this week, huh?
Yeah, the Kimberly-Clark deal. It's all done.
Hey, wait a second. That bill failed in the legislature.
Yeah, but the governor used his executive power to kind of resurrect the deal, and now it's done.
Oh, classic He-Man move.
By the power of Grayskull!
That's right, by the power of Weedick. Yeah. He had the power.
That's what it sounds like when you award tax credits for job retention, right there.
Yeah, yeah. But I would argue maybe the bigger news this week was Governor Walker signing the legislature's lame duck bills.
Oh, good point. The bills that take away the power of Democratic Governor-elect Tony Evers.
Oh, yeah. Classic He-Man in reverse.
Let the power return!
That sound you heard right there is the power disappearing, I think.
Into the abyss.
Right.
Bottomless abyss. Well, it sounds like we have a lot to talk about this week, guys. This is the WPR Politics Podcast. I'm John K. Wilson.
I'm Sean Johnson.
And I'm Laurel White.
By the power of podcast, let's talk about gubernatorial powers. So in case you're not familiar, those clips we played were from the 1980s animated action series He-Man and Masters of the Universe, but they fit really, really well to current-day Wisconsin politics.
Who's not familiar with He-Man, guys?
Well, we know you are, old man Sean Johnson. You're quite a fan.
Pretty important part of my life, I'd say. And I actually remembered that episode where He-Man relinquished the power. So
Sean has just been waiting for a He-Man WPR Politics podcast crossover.
Yeah, so and here it is. Here it is.
It's happening.
I'm pretty excited. Let's keep going before I start gushing about what a great show He-Man was.
Quick, John, ask him a question
about
politics.
State government news, quick. I'll embarrass myself.
There were two stories this week, much like there's two sides to the He-Man character, Prince Adam and He-Man. But I digress. Let's talk about the news stories.
Okay. Well, okay. The first one was the Kimberly-Clark deal. Mm-hmm. And I think this is so interesting because there's been a lot of talk about whether these new changes would really restrict the new governor in any way. And Governor Walker has downplayed them and legislative Republicans have downplayed them. And then this week we had the shining example of how Governor Walker has a power now that Governor-elect Tony Evers won't have.
So just to interject here, this is tied to the lame duck legislature bills, too.
Correct. So, yes. So Kimberly-Clark, the lame duck bills, it all came together this week.
Yeah. It's interesting how things evolve in the political world because it's like we thought the extraordinary session was going to be about Kimberly-Clark. And then it wasn't because there wasn't enough support in the Senate and these lame duck bills kind of took over. And then full circle, Kimberly-Clark ends up being kind of wrapped in with these powers that changed in the lame duck bills. It's a whole thing.
So the extraordinary session bill that wasn't to give Kimberly-Clark Foxconn-style tax incentives, that bill didn't pass the Senate. And so I think a lot of people presumed that is dead. Then Governor Walker announced this week, we've got a deal with Kimberly-Clark. He announced it with Kimberly-Clark, a $28 million tax incentive package that he was able to strike using only money that's already set aside through the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation through enterprise zones. Mm-hmm. And this will award tax credits to the company for the retention of 388 mm-hmm. jobs.
Yep.
At its Cold Spring facility. And so Walker was able to do this with Weedick. He didn't have to go ask the legislature or anything. They just struck the deal and held the press conference, basically.
I think it's important to note that it's a much smaller incentive package than he really wanted.
It is.
I mean,
and the company stayed anyway.
Yeah. Because what was originally proposed was like $100 million. And then when one of the two Kimberly-Clark plants was definitely going to close, it shrunk to about $70 million. And then what was eventually approved this week or announced, I guess, is the $28 million. So it's a lot smaller than what the governor asked for to begin with.
And what does Kimberly-Clark have to do to get those tax incentives?
So Kimberly-Clark has to retain a certain number of jobs, and they have to make investments in their facilities that are going to equal about $200 million. So they're making some improvements, and Governor Walker has said they're, you know, that's kind of proof that they're putting down roots and really going to stay in Wisconsin long term. So that's kind of their end of the bargain, capital investments and jobs.
But so like we alluded to in the intro, this was a move that Walker summoned up. He lifted his sword of economic development aloft and said, I have the power to keep Kimberly-Clark here. But that's not a power that would be afforded to his successor.
No. Side note, people don't realize that was the economic development strategy of Eternia in He-Man. How did this project get done? Oh, yeah, He-Man came, held up the sword, and there was financing. It was a very strange economy.
It doesn't seem like they have great infrastructure in Eternia, honestly.
Bite your tongue.
It's always amazing. They're always driving around in, like, canyons and stuff.
Yeah, but they in hover cars that also turn into planes with lasers. What more do you want?
Whatever, but those are probably private sector, innovations.
They do seem to be confined to the royal family. Laurel's over there like, move on, please. I told you I would embarrass myself.
You shouldn't have opened that door, John.
No.
Okay, so say the thing that you thought was really interesting, Sean.
And not about hover cars.
Okay, so the thing that I was saying was interesting was that there's been a lot of downplaying of these lame duck session bills, and they don't really take away the power of the governor. Well, in fact, one of these bills would prevent Governor-elect Tony Evers or, you know, Governor Walker, as we sit here today, from reaching a deal like the Kimberly-Clark deal without the legislature's okay. So, you know, the governor was able to do this on his own with Wiedek. If he tried to do the same deal now, at this moment, he would have to go to the legislature's Joint Finance Committee and say, hey, guys, I need you to okay this. Now, the governor, Governor Walker, downplayed that, said, oh, you know, they would do that. It's such a good deal, though. Of course, they would do that. But remember, we just spent all year with a Senate that did not want to pass this Kimberly-Clark bill. I don't think you can just say that it would be a given that the Joint Finance Committee would sign off.
So just to clarify, the new law is that if there's going to be an economic development package approved by Wiedek, for a company
using the enterprise zones,
it has to be approved by the budget committee.
Correct. It would be like if He-Man had to run everything by the royal family in Eternia, you know.
Got it. Okay. Well, just to like veer away from that as quickly as possible. I think it's interesting to note that we've been waiting since the legislature passed these extraordinary session bills to see when the governor was going to take action, you know, checking in to see if his office had called for the bills yet. And it was kind of days were going by and we weren't quite sure why he wasn't acting. But then it became clear, as we've been talking about, if he had acted sooner, this Kimberly-Clark thing wouldn't have been able to happen. So
yeah,
it happened. He announced it. And then very shortly after, we got the rest of the extraordinary session bills signed, and we got the details and whether or not he vetoed them and all that good stuff we've been waiting for what seems like weeks, but I guess it was just like a little over 1 week.
Well, yeah, I guess it was pretty fast. So we had that drama. When's the governor going to call for the bills? And everybody had to like reacquaint themselves with like, what does it mean to call for the bills?
Because normally it seems like to me, I've never had to like report on him calling for the bills before.
Because
it must happen pretty quickly most of the time.
Or it just doesn't matter. Like it'll happen when it happens normally. But there's so much intense focus on these that what happens is the governor has to go. He has to ask the Senate chief clerk, hey, could I have those bills? And yeah, he can read them on the internet and stuff, but he doesn't technically have the bill from the Senate chief clerk until he calls for it. And when he calls for it, then there's a 6-day clock, not counting Sundays, in which he has to act.
And if he doesn't in 6 days, then it just like automatically becomes law or something.
Yeah, it would be. So we're all focused on, ooh, when's he going to call for this? Well, it turns out he was waiting until he got this Kimberly-Clark deal. Then he called for the bills, and then, boom, then the next thing happened.
Right. And the governor, like, you know, this really kind of probably should have occurred to us before, because the governor said he was working on the Kimberly-Clark deal. He's like, I'm not giving up on Kimberly-Clark. We're going to get this done before I leave office. And so we should have put two and two together.
I feel like He-Man staring down an abyss, having just dropped my sword the way I dropped the ball in that story.
Yeah, well, it's okay.
All right. So the other thing that we were waiting on, was the governor going to veto anything? Ooh, drama, because the governor himself said, I might do some vetoes.
Right, which is interesting because today he talked about how he couldn't actually do vetoes except on one of them because only one of them had appropriations in it, and he can only veto appropriations bills.
Yeah, spoiler alert, he did not veto any bills.
Right, yeah, he didn't veto anything.
Let's get to that part first.
Buried the lead a little bit.
Sorry, I should know better than that.
The vetoes did not happen.
No
but
vetoes.
For the reason that Laurel explained, only one of the bills had an appropriation. And it was the bill, I called Fiscal Bureau, and they called Reference Bureau. And it was the bill that had to deal with all of the Medicaid waivers.
Mm-hmm.
That was the one that they felt he could have used the, you know, the partial veto authority granted him under appropriations.
So he could have
bills.
Done a full veto on any of the bills. He couldn't
but then
have
it would
used
be
his
all
line
absolutely.
Item.
It would be a baby out with the bathwater kind of thing, though. He wouldn't want to.
He
do.
Couldn't have taken his sword and sliced out certain words.
Right.
Of
one
whatever.
Of the powers that he's been talking about so frequently. I feel like the line item veto is something that we haven't talked about as extensively as we have in the past, like, 2 weeks, because it is, like, a unique power to the Wisconsin governor. Not well, not to just the Wisconsin governor,
no, but
not
the Wisconsin
every governor
still has a very strong veto pen.
Right,
that as not Walker a lot has of pointed out at every stop.
Yeah.
Still there. I didn't do anything.
He's still
there.
Evers will still have that.
Yeah, but Walker, I guess if you were wondering where he might line item veto something or just veto a portion of the bill, I guess the bill that I was looking at was the one with all the interesting stuff that was sort of loosely related. You know, the one that prevents Tony Evers from making the Capitol a gun-free zone or requires the report on pardons and forces Evers out of the, you know, to stay in the ACA lawsuit, and just all that stuff is in that one bill.
Mm-hmm.
But according to the legislative service agencies, that's not an appropriations bill and therefore not ripe for a partial veto.
So there could have been something in there that he might have wanted to have vetoed, but he couldn't throw the baby out with the bathwater and veto the entire thing.
It's just pure speculation at this point, because all we ever heard the governor say, Governor Walker say, was good things about these bills. He never said, well, there's this one provision that I'm kind of iffy on. When he at the signing ceremony in Green Bay, he just kind of rattled off all the stuff he liked about them. He liked the early voting restrictions. He said, I like early voting, but I want it to be fair. Was that his word?
Mm-hmm.
Wants consistent time frames for early voting. Similar time frames were struck down in federal court. And already One Wisconsin Institute, along with Eric Holder, have said that they're going to challenge these new restrictions. Walker talked about, what else did he talk about? He liked it all, basically. Everything, it was just kind of like, I like this, I like this, I like this. There was nothing, well, I'd like to veto this thing about blank, but I can't. It was just, he just called it a technicality and I can't do it. So I'm going to sign them all. Mm-hmm. And then confetti rained down.
Right, yes.
No confetti, but there was a chart that got a lot of attention.
Oh, yeah. Man, isn't that funny that I feel like that's gotten more attention today on Twitter and even in news articles. Mm-hmm. Then the rest of it was this Venn diagram that the governor presented to explain.
Which arguably is not a Venn diagram.
Right. That's right. It resembled a Venn diagram.
I think Sean is the master of explaining diagrams on the podcast, so we're going to throw it to Sean Johnson. Well, you love explaining diagrams.
I do love Venn diagrams, though. They sometimes help me understand things because, you know, they have the overlying circles. Okay.
Yeah, so what did
John?
Oh, so
John's better at this.
All right, well, so
I'm phoning a friend.
In a classic Venn diagram, you have two or more circles where there's a space overlapping in between the two. And so there are two unlike things, but you use the space where the two are overlapping to document the things that those two things share.
Very good.
Right?
Yeah, thank you.
I think the Journal Sentinel put it that the governor's chart was a Venn diagram-like graphic.
Correct.
But not actually a Venn diagram, because it had two things in the two circles that were the same, mm-hmm. and then had something in the middle that I think it was Phil Bump that essentially boiled it down to, this is a chart.
Yeah. Phil Bump in the Washington Post, which took a couple hours after the – it wasn't even a couple hours after the bill signing. The Washington Post had a really entertaining article up there about Venn diagrams and what is one and what isn't one.
Basically, it boils down to the fact that it wasn't a true Venn diagram, even though it looked like one, and the governor was taking heat for it.
You know what we should do? We should make a real Venn diagram.
I do it all the time. I love them. What do you want to make a Venn diagram about?
I think it would be interesting to do a Venn diagram of like the executive powers that Walker has right now or had before he signed these bills and the powers that Evers will have. And then it would have to be very large, though.
Well, I gotta break it to you, Laurel, that the Washington Post did just such.
Oh, they did that?
They did that Venn diagram. And it was pretty good. And actually, I say this, it was a pretty good way of understanding the bills if you kind of step back and look at it. So one of the circles was Walker, one was Evers. In the Walker circle, where there was no overlap, he had more control of Weedick, broader control of work requirement rules for food stamps, for Medicaid, mm-hmm. broader ability to enact new rules, and more ability to change benefits programs.
What about the federal lawsuit stuff?
Well, it just didn't make the circle. Yeah, that would be a good one to put in there,
I
too.
I would have put that in the circle.
And then in the overlap, they have appointment authority, administrative rule authority, budget authority, veto authority, line item veto authority, executive order authority, powerful chief executive. And then in the Evers-only portion of this Venn diagram, it says, not named Scott was the unique Evers power.
They made a funny.
Yeah, it was.
So throw in a little snark.
A little bit, yes. They said it looked a little bit lonely over there in that circle, so they put something in there.
All right. Well, that covers Venn diagrams.
Yeah. Can we talk about one more thing? It's a bit of a non sequitur here, but
is it about He-Man?
It's not about He-Man.
Okay.
I mean, it might turn into that. It's at some point.
No promises. Okay.
No, the Kimberly Clark thing. I thought it was pretty interesting that the day that I saw it, like, almost at the same time I was finding out about Wisconsin's Kimberly Clark deal, that there was a plant closing in Arkansas. Mm-hmm. Kimberly Clark told people that day, you're not going to work here anymore. I think they're going to phase in layoffs going into 2021 is what I'd read. That is really something to me, you know. So there was some, you know, maybe there was some bluffing by the company in terms of what they needed from Wisconsin to stay here. They needed a bigger package. They needed it by before the election. Then they had those rolling deadlines that kept changing, but they were not bluffing about, we're going to get money from somewhere and there's going to be a winner or a loser here. I mean, there's talk about states bidding against each other's in situations like these. And you also, just in the same way that you had a clear-cut example of a power that Walker had that Evers would not had, you had a clear-cut example this week of what happens when states get involved in economic development and offer cash to companies to stay. Kimberly Clark stayed in the state that offered the cash, and they cut some jobs in the state that didn't.
I wonder if Arkansas will offer any incentives to get them to stay, and it could just keep changing the state?
I think they did.
They did?
But we offered more.
Well, there you go. Interesting. I liked your non sequitur, Sean.
Thanks.
That was good. That was not He-Man related.
Yeah, a little dark, man. You know, people losing their jobs. Yeah. But it can't all be He-Man.
Yeah, true.
Well, He-Man has a cat that turns into a bigger cat. So Sean Johnson is WPR's Capital Bureau Chief.
It's a talking cat, too. And he goes from being a cowardly talking cat to battle cat. A cat on steroids with armor. Laurel White is WPR's Capital Reporter.
And I have nothing to offer about Battle Cat, but John K. Wilson is our resident politics nerd.
you have the power to get new episodes of the WPR Politics Podcast delivered to you almost every single week, and all you have to do is subscribe on iTunes. You can also find the show on Google Play and Stitcher, as well as many other podcast apps. And you can catch up on all of our past episodes anytime at wpr.org/politics.